My name is Gary. I'm an alcoholic. And I always am fairly amazed when people show up here at this time of night to do archives anyway. And but what I've done here, these are just four display panels that I originally showed at the Atlanta Roundup. And the purpose is twofold. One is to expose you to some AA literature, which a lot of people aren't terribly familiar with. This is a Alcoholics Anonymous, an interpretation of the 12 steps. It used to be published by the Atalan Society. That's the group that is the Atlanta Central Office. That's their formal name. What it is actually based on, however, is a pamphlet that comes from Detroit. I got this probably about a month ago. Got a couple copies of them. Then I have a variety of pamphlets that are basically, they're not copies, because every time a city decides to publish one of these, they end up doing something special to it that kind of puts their own signature on it, and we in Atlanta did as well. But what I wanted to first of all go after is that in some people, if you were to take one of these things and decide to have a Alcoholics Anonymous meeting about it, some people might go into apoplexy. Others might shout you down, they thinking that, oh, my heavens, you're not using conference-approved literature. Now, what I wanted to do is basically start off with kind of like that as a background. I would like to make you aware, first of all, of a pamphlet. The pamphlet number is rather, if you may not remember this, SMF-29. All right. But it's also represented if you go to AA.org and navigate yourself. Just put that in SMF-29 as a search. What you will get is something that Alcoholics Anonymous has said for six decades. But a lot of people are not terribly familiar with that. And I'm just going to be reading you their words on the whole subject of conference approved. And that is, the term conference approved describes written or audiovisual material approved by the conference for publication by the GSO. This process assures that everything in such literature is in accord with AA principles. Conference-approved material always deals with the recovery program of Alcoholics Anonymous or with information about the AA fellowship. The term has no relation to material not published by the GSO. It does not, emphasis underlined, does not imply conference disapproval of other material about AA. A great deal of literature helpful to alcoholics is published by others, and AA does not try to tell any individual member what he or she may or may not read. Central offices and inner groups do write and distribute pamphlets or booklets that are not conference approved. If such pieces meet the needs of the local membership, they may be legitimately classified as AA literature. There is no conflict between AA World Services, Inc., publisher of conference-approved literature, and central offices or intergroups. Rather, they complement each other. The conference does not disapprove of such material. Now, with that as a background, there's I have from a document that comes from it's a website, hindsfoot.org. And it's actually CONFAPPR.html, conference approved. And you actually get this through, AA History Lovers. It's a link. And this has been compiled by a fellow, an Alcoholics Anonymous author, by the name of, Glenn Chestnut. And he just, gives us the background of the perspective of what brought about this concern of conference approved in the first place, because prior to the 70s, an old timer would have kind of looked at you cross-eyed and go, what? Because there was not the concern then. Until the 1970s, no one worried at all about whether or not a piece of literature about alcoholism and the AA program was or was not conference approved. They talk about the passage of the Hughes Act. The Hughes Act was then what legitimized alcoholism being a disease, at least according to the insurance industry. That attracted big money. That attracted psychologists and psychiatrists, and they also wanted to write information having to do with alcoholism. So debates and power struggles over the Hughes Act in the U.S. Congress was being passed, and some of that controversy came to us. Then what we had was people showing up at AA meetings with literature that was not published by AA or an alcoholic. It was published by a doctor who had some opinion about us. That caused all sorts of conflict. The natural response was, you know, some of these alcoholics came out of treatment programs, brainwashed by the kinds of psychiatrists and psychotherapists who looked down on the 12-step program with contempt and indoctrinated that by a group of mental health professionals who were convinced they could produce long-lasting recovery in more scientific fashion through their own bag of psychological gimmicks. Now, we have said that, we make it clear, if you've got a better way to do something, that's fine, but don't come into necessarily our meetings and try to take it over with things that don't have anything to do with alcoholics. And this was, it's of interest that, back in the earlier days, with regards to conference-approved literature, and I actually have, just for the heck of it, I brought one of these, the Little Red Book. Okay, you know, no lightning coming from anywhere. But here's Bill Wilson in 1950. In November of 1950, Bill Wilson wrote a fellow about the Little Red Book. The introduction to the 12 steps, which Barry and Ed Webster had been publishing in Minneapolis since 1946. The Little Red Book does fill a definite need in wide circulation. Therefore, its usefulness is unquestioned. This is Bill Wilson. AA has a definite place for such a book. Someday I may try to write an introduction book myself, which I hope might complement favorably with the Little Red Book. Here is at the foundation, we are not policemen, we're a service, and AAs are free to read any book they choose. Now, I don't know how many of you had the opportunity in your meeting to go through 12 steps from the perspective of the Little Red Book, but if some people, for whatever reason, you know how we have it, I mean, some of us have a tendency to complain about our home groups and so forth, but if you're tired about reading the same old stuff, and it's not old stuff as far as I'm concerned, but if you're tired of it, I would suggest taking that to your group conscience, because for some reason or another, we've got this idea that, again, and a lot of people mean well when they come up with this, is they just figure if it doesn't come out from New York, somehow it's don't do it. All the way back in 1944, a lady that I've been doing a kind of researching, this is Bobby Berger. She wrote the Washington D.C. pamphlet, and really Detroit originated this, but the first people that printed the same information was Washington D.C. The Washington, D.C. pamphlet and the new Cleveland sponsorship pamphlet and a host of others are all local projects. We do not actually approve or disapprove of these local pieces. By that I mean that the foundation feels each group is entitled to write up its own can opener. That's a term that I haven't heard used in a long time, but it's fairly common, or at least was common in earlier days, can opener. And let it stand on its own merits. All of them have good points, and very few have caused any controversy. But as in all things of a local nature, we keep our hands off. That's what was called headquarters. Back then, the GSO hadn't been that name hadn't been used yet, either pro or con. I think there must be at least 25 local pamphlets now being used, and I've yet to see one that hasn't had some good points. I think it is up to each individual group whether or not it wants to use and buy these pamphlets from the group that puts them out. So really, from the start, we've had a whole bundle of these, and, you know, after we is through, I've got I got this in the last month from Detroit. There's a copy of this. I have a couple copies of the Atlanta version. There's three copies of the what's known as the Table Mate that comes from Akron. They've made some additional enhancements to it. They've added on the traditions. I think they might also have something to do with the concepts. I think there's also one from Washington, and I know there, I don't have a copy here, but I know there's one from Seattle. So, part of the curiosity you see is this is our Atlanta one, but we don't publish it anymore. And, you know, the question could be, why? Well, you know, if people aren't going to buy it, then there's no point to it. But at the same time, what happens to be in this, you know? Before I go into the contents of this, the same hindsfoot.org conference-approved HTML for that you can get through it's AA History's Lovers, the link is... and maybe you've encountered this at some time or another. Bob Pearson was the manager of the central office of the GSO, I think, from 75 to 84. I could stand corrected on the dates there. And when he left, he gave a closing talk, and it's our greatest danger, rigidity. And that, again, is going after the same kind of concept of that, you know, for that Bill Wilson, in many regards, was a seeker, was using all sorts of things. And it was never in his focus that we would be trying to narrow things out and make, well, we came up rules. I mean, you know, be that narrow, because it's not to our benefit. And a lot of it would stifle a lot of there's some other things that are in this this link that I highly recommend in terms of you know, dealing with, again, well-meaning people in your home group that think for some reason or another that you would be violating the tradition somehow or whatever, if you were decide to study a book or use the 24-hour day book or any of the variety. I mean, when Sandy Beach, before he passed away, they were going through Ernest Kurtz's Not God. And there's nothing to stop it. Of course, each group really is autonomous, too. And nobody's going to care about New York. But this Detroit pamphlet original, I've been talking to folks. That's Area 33, of course, that's where our next international is going to be, just out of curiosity as well. And the Detroit pamphlet original, it was this introduction to the steps was originally published in Detroit as a 20-page pamphlet when AA first began, when newcomers were gathered in large sessions and allowed to ask questions of a panel of people with longer sobriety. It's a marvelous example of early old-time AA teaching. And it's pretty easy to recognize this format because there's a standard amount of text, and originally broke the steps up into four groups so you could have four meetings. I'm not making this as a recommendation. I'm just reporting it because how they decided to group the steps is, well, they do have admission, which is step one. But then they have, they call the spiritual steps, and you can see these on the board is, that's the spiritual steps, which is the second meeting, they're grouped together as steps 2, 3, 5, 6, 7, and 11. Okay? That's kind of half of them you get right then. Akron and the Table Mate decided to divide those spiritual steps up into two different meetings, so they had five. So they had 2, 3, and 5, 6, 7, and 11. Then the third discussion in the Detroit pamphlet is inventory and restitution. That's 4, 8, 9, and 10. And then they have the active, the final one, and that is, that's step, 12. I learned through talking up in, to the fellow, Bill Thompson up in Detroit that, it was their idea in 1943 that newcomers were required to go to only beginner meetings for the first 6 months. Now, you know, we're like herding cats. I don't know how in the world anybody would ever enforce that. But that was the idea anyway, and in their meeting schedule back then, they specifically designated what were beginner meetings and what weren't. So they were trying to steer them. This material was first assembled in Detroit. A copy of the material was later borrowed and used by the groups in Washington, D.C. So it's sometimes referred in early AA literature as the Washington, D.C. pamphlet. In fact, the first printed version seems likely to have been published in Washington, D.C., even though the information originated in Detroit. This pamphlet was also published later over on the West Coast, the two most knowledgeable old-timers that were consulted in terms of getting the background, one of them was Mel Barger, okay? And there's also a friend that some old-timers in Detroit that backed up the information. You can see there's a preface to the left. It's basically they gave us these meetings are held for the purpose of acquainting both old and new members with the 12 steps in which the program is based. They list the steps, and then also they give the breakout of the four meetings. And as part of the discussion, number one, they want you to have careful reading and rereading of the big book, regular attendance at weekly group meetings, study the program, daily practice of the program, reading of approved printed matter on alcoholism. They have even some approval here, informal discussion with other members. Now, they have 40 suggested test questions. I haven't done the look at the pamphlet yet. We have an equivalent pamphlet in AA, 40 questions. I haven't done a match or even tried to figure out whether or not AA borrowed from this one, but you can see what the questions are. I think we have 44 questions or something, and that would be of interest. A little bit of a different, in the big book, it says, why does an alcoholic drink? And it has some emphasis on lots of times that he doesn't even know why. Well, they try to tell you here how the, an escape, an evidence of maladjusted personality, a development of social drinking, and so on. They have a whole mess of reasons why they think the alcoholic. Then they also, we resolve to do something about it, so we must change our way of thinking. They have 12 pep talks, by and large, of what we should be doing. And as part of the discussion, they have a conclusion. And then at the end of every one of the meetings, they also have a question and answer time. But that was for the newcomers that happened to be there. And then this discussion number two with the spiritual phase, they repeat these careful reading and what you're supposed to do. And I'm not going to go into the details of the individual steps that you can take a look at some of that yourself. The discussion number three, inventory and restitution, steps 4, 8, 9, and 10. And here put together. I think it's interesting for me that list character defects, they decide to do it in step 10. I guess just because they figure that we don't entirely get rid of them anyway, so you might as well put them there where we will use them more often. And, selfishness, egotism, false pride, impatience, resentments, lack of common honesty, deceit, hate, jealousy, envy, laziness. That's, and sometimes I end up using I need lists for, I run, I lead a fourth and fifth step workshop at the, at Lanham's workshop, and I always like good list of character defects, because I have some of them too. But then also, it conversely, an inventory should show a list of virtues, and so it has honesty, simple justice, fairness, generosity, truthfulness, modesty, humility, honest pride, simplicity, patience, industry. And I think that sometime in the other, our sister program, Al Anon, they always insist upon taking an inventory that we should list our positive attributes too. I think that, and that's something to at least think about. I don't know about you, but I did my first inventory, and you know, that's in the I'm the lowest scum on the bottom of the earth stage. And you know, that isn't necessarily accurate either. And then, of course, the discussion four is the active on the 12th step and how we're supposed to carry the message. The others, they have any number of instructions how we're supposed to attend every one of the meetings of our home group and owning and loaning to Newman our very own copy of the Big Book. And I think it was might have been a little harder to come by back then than they are now. And developing unselfishness, we practice these principles on all our affairs. And, you know, we resolve to live our life one day at a time. We pray each day. We pray each night. We are patient. We keep calm. There's some very practical things here, good reminders. I mean, not necessarily things that we haven't heard before, but I always like maybe the same message in different words to reinforce what this alcoholic needs to hear. Now we get into, to me, the addition part, which makes this rather interesting, and gives this kind of like its own flavor. In both Detroit and Atlanta, used Emmett Fox, and it was very normal for on a Wednesday in New York City in the 30s for AAs to attend an AA meeting and then go hear Emmett Fox, or the other way around. Emmett Fox never spoke for, I think, more than 20 minutes, maybe 30 minutes. That was as long. So you could do both pretty well. And they have this is actually they don't identify it as such, but what I try to do is to determine where these things came from. And this particular one, you know, Emmett Fox's Sermon on the Mount was read by many an alcoholic, including Dr. Bob. This Keep on the Beam appears on page 195 of Find and Use Your Inner Power, first published in 1937. Okay, they use the commercial flying is done on a radio beam, and they try to give the image of how we're supposed to stay on the beam. And I, you know, with being late, I'm not going to try to read that, but if you're interested, you can take a look at that. And then, there's a variety of poetry that has been added to this, and I think some of this is just delightful. This is, from a, Edgar Albert Guest, Life is a Gift. Life is a gift to be used every day, not to be smothered and hidden away. It isn't a thing to be hid in a chest where you gather your keepsakes and treasure your best. It isn't a joy to be sipped now and then and promptly put back in a dark place again. Life is a gift that the humblest beast may boast of, and one of the humblest may well make the most of. Get out and live it each hour of the day. Wear it and use it as much as you may. Don't keep it in niches and corners and grooves. You'll find in the service of beauty improves. Now, that's attributed to a fellow by the name of Uncle Dick. Who the heck was Uncle Dick? I had no idea, but it really came from Edgar Albert Guest, and that's part of the wonderful ability to search on the Internet and match words, and that's where I was able to track that down. Here's another poem, and I'm not going to read this one, but it starts, aiding a brother who falls by the way, lending a hand when he's tempted to stray. When you go through this poem and you list the first letter of it, it vertically spells Alcoholics Anonymous. I think that's kind of interesting. Okay, that's displayed here as well. No author for that poem has been found anywhere. You know, sometimes with there are little pearls that happen to be in this, and this is just simply a poem by, would you believe, and it's just by the title of If, but it's Rudyard Kipling, okay? And it's a poem by British Nobel Laureate Rudyard Kipling, written in 1895 and first published in Rewards and Fairies in 1910. It is a tribute to a person written in the form of paternal advice to a poet's son. If you can keep your head up when all around you are losing theirs and blaming it on you, if you can trust yourself when all the men doubt you but make allowance for their doubting you, and it goes on. I think it's a very handy thing to have. There's the author for Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow. This is another one of those that's unknown, but there's yesterday. There are 2 days in every week about which we should not worry, 2 days which we should be kept free from fear and apprehension, and those days are yesterday and tomorrow. And he wants us to stay in today. That's some very, to me, very solid one day at a time kind of thinking, and who knows where it came from, but it happens to be in here. And then there's another one called Believe, and this is, again, attributed to Uncle Dick. And the closest, though, I could come to matching this one is James 2:24 and James 2:26. And that has to do with how man, well, he should enjoy the result of his work, and he should be pursuing his God, and I rather inspirational. Then this one is again attributed to, this is the third one that goes to Uncle Dick, but through matching this one over the internet, would you believe, the source of this one is Leonardo da Vinci. And this is a tribute to a woman. This woman is beautiful just as life is beautiful when we are in health. She has no quarrel with the world. She loves and she is loved again. No vain longing fills her heart. No feverish arrest disturbs her dreams, for her crouching fears in the passing hour, that ineffable smile which plays around her mouth says plainly that life is good. This was apparently describing a painting that was done of her. There's, I think, one of the more common things that is, you see it fairly often if you go to a central office. There's the man in the glass. That's pretty, when you get what you want, and when you struggle for wealth and the world makes you king for a day, just go to the mirror and look at yourself and see what that man has to say. It's that I've seen that at Cleveland, Akron, in a number of places. There's Wilford Arlen Peterson. He was an American author who wrote for This Week magazine, and he has an article in here, The Art of Getting Along. He was he published 9 books, starting in 1949, and again with The Art of Getting Along. Apparently he was a very prominent, columnist, and here is a poem that was also used in the Detroit Original. It's called Tell Her So. Amid the cares of married strife, in spite of toil and business life, if you value your sweet wife, tell her so. And you can read that, but that's basically it's a love sonnet that's in the middle of this, and I think that was probably put in for folks that are married. And then they also have they have their own version of what is AA. Alcoholics Anonymous is a group of people for whom alcohol has become a major problem. It goes on to give definitions of alcoholics. We of Alcoholics Anonymous believe that the alcoholic is suffering from a disease for which no cure has yet been found. There's also, I've seen this in a number of places on the internet, God has a plan. This one's fairly well known, as well. There's no author, for that. And then were this pamphlet to be printed again by the Atlanta Central Office, this poem would need to be retitled. Which Are You? But I was actually able to find this poem, A Builder or a Wrecker, and it was attributed to an author, Charles Franklin Benviger. I'd never heard of him. It gets a little religious, two lines were removed. But it's a delightful little poem about how we are, how our deeds shape our life. And, O Lord, let my life be and my labors be that which will build for eternity. In the Atlanta version, there's there's also the traditions, and so this one is obviously after 1950. I don't have a date, but there's actually there's two versions of this pamphlet. There's another one that comes from Atlanta, and I don't have a idea of which precedes which. But that's yet to be determined. But what I just pretty much wanted to give you an idea that there's some refreshing little information in this pamphlet, and I would be encouraging you to in the future be, if you haven't started already, to start looking around the large circle of literature there is that surrounds our program, because there's all sorts of jewels. You know, and if it was never intended by any of our co-founders that we would be living off of just conference approved or the network of literature that came out of New York from the very beginning, these people were trying to get good information from wherever they could get it. And in many regards, I think that's a lesson which sometimes we in the fellowship have forgotten. That there's good spiritual stuff and that has been written by all sorts of people around us. It's up to us to take advantage of the gifts that we've been given. And with that, if there's any questions or anything that you'd like to ask, the floor is open for questions. Thank you for coming, incidentally. Go ahead.
Norm, I'm an alcoholic. If you do say... Say you're in a. We got a lot of questions, but say you're in a meeting and you venture into one of these little forays in one of these pamphlets or something that is outside the norm of what you usually come into a meeting, and somebody. Because I've been in meetings and I've heard it, somebody will start a discussion and somebody in the back will say, "That's not approved." So do you have any quotes or anything to, if somebody does say that, do you have an appropriate quote to fend off?
It's from what you first read.
I would go right to the, I carry this around in the back of these notebooks that I keep, because I have displays all the time that in archives just naturally, and a lot of it has very little to do with the conference. So if you want to have your SMF 29, go to that and you could have it. Now, there are groups, SMF-29 is.
But it's not anywhere in the service manual or anything like that?
No.
No.
You can get it at AA.org. It's literally, it's just a standard part of our. Now, there are group consciences, and one of the meetings I go to that specifically say only conference-approved literature be used at this meeting, and I have no beef with that at all.
Right.
But a lot of times it's the people that don't state it. Now, let's say. An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. I wouldn't necessarily go to a meeting that I've never been to before and try to pull something on them that they didn't expect. Okay? This might be a good question for, to discuss with your home group or with a group that you're familiar with and say, this is what I'd like to do. What do you think? So you can give people a heads up, because you know as well as I do that there's, let's just say, that, well, in our literature, they do talk about the bleeding deacon, you know, and we don't need necessarily authority figures, because I mean, if we find one, we want to rebel against them anyway, you know, regardless of what they say. That's where, and I would just suggest that you test the waters and see ahead of time. Because, again, I've been in people that I've been in meetings with people have been shouted down.
Where did you get that quote from Bill Wilson about
The Bill Wilson quote, that is again, that's from the hindsfoot.org website.
H-I-N-D-S?
Yes, hindsfoot.org, and it is a, again, the full address for that is hindsfoot.org/CONFAPPR.html.
Can I repeat
that? Sure.
Sure,
be happy to.
Yeah,
hindsfoot.org/CON, F as in Frank, APPR.html.
This talk is being recorded. We will put it on WeJoy.org. Those who want to, should have it there in layers. WeJoy.org. It'll be under the recent tab when it comes down.
Okay.
WeJoy?
WeJoy.org.
My name is Nancy. I'm out
on the way. Nancy.
This has been a controversy for years about conference approval versus. And while I was archive chair, this guy came up to me and he said, is Bible conference approved? And I said, well, you know, it depends on how you look at it. Because our big book, there's so much in our big book that came from the Bible, but is put in wording so me as an alcoholic can comprehend what it means. So, you know, is it or isn't it? But, you know, there's so much of Hazleton out there. There's so many things that are being printed that is spiritually based. By all means, I have read most of it or a lot of it. I have gathered a wealth of information. I have gathered a wealth of spiritual growth from these things. But for me, if I'm going to be in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, I don't want my message to be garbled. I would prefer in an AA meeting that our literature stays in our meeting and not bringing in all this other stuff that could be religious in nature and run off people that just don't believe in that.
Fair enough.
I think for me, it is very detrimental to not being all inclusive anymore. And, you know, saying that we're going to read the Bible at the meeting or another spiritual book, a Buddha book. You know, I feel that once that's all brought in, then people that don't believe that's going to be turned off and perhaps go out and die.
Well, again, you know, when you go to the King's School meeting at up in Akron, there's Dr. Bob's Bible, you know, for whatever reason. And again, with the group conscience, this is not to stir the pot as much as I will pose you the question and because this is part of the dilemma for me. I was sponsored by Bill Roop. Probably one of the most loving men I've ever met. And I've been sponsored by also another fellow, John Holmes, who just died in July. Okay? Now, if, rather than me being a speaker here tonight, I would have loved to have had Bill Roop show up here instead. Okay? and Bill be asked if he was asked any number of times to tell a story. He could have come up right up here, and he could have read it. Nobody in the world would have bothered him for reading his very own story, which incidentally happens to be in A Thousand Years of Sobriety, published by Hazelden. Okay. However, then I show up and I read his story. But it's not conference approved. What is the conclusion? Is he dead? Does his words no longer be allowed at an AA meeting to be read? I don't think that was ever the intent of well-meaning people. And that's where a lot of this came from. Richmond Walker, with 24-hour day book, Ed Webster. If any of those people were here, I'd sit right there and I'd listen to them. Those are the people that were the real contributors. I'm just a bunch of Johnny come lately. So that's the dilemma I have, that for some reason or another, the way it can work out, it doesn't necessarily, that for some reason, once they go to the great meeting in the sky, we're not allowed to use their words anymore.
No, I don't agree with that.
Well, that's in effect kind of where some of my, and I realize, again, psychological, psychiatry, and we don't want to open up the Pandora's box to bring a bunch of psychological gobbledygook into our meetings, but as archivists, I want to keep my sponsors alive. Excuse me.
I ain't saying that I am an alcoholic. I think one of the key things in the statement that GSO makes is that if it's an intergroup that develops the literature, okay, then what you've got is you've got a group of alcoholics getting together, speaking about the literature, and deciding to write these pamphlets. They said they don't have a problem with that. I think that's a very interesting caveat to this. There is a thing called the power of legitimacy. And this is this idea that if it's in writing, it has more power and truth than it does if it's just spoken. Whereas we can understand that somebody reading something, you know, speaking and telling their story, we know that's just their story. The trick I think we get into is giving legitimacy to and identifying the program itself and what that program is to something that was written by someone outside the program with a completely different agenda. And who decides? And I think that we get into some tricky areas there as to we had things at my home group where we just decided we just have the wording that says that we base our the sharing on the solutions as found in conference-approved literature. The "as" becomes very interesting because it means something that is very similar to what we have in conference-approved literature. And in that one, we're able to bring it in and go, that's not like any conference-approved literature that I know of. And I think in that way, it's real tricky kind of a line there. So that's all I have to say on that.
Okay. Damon? Yeah, Thomas?
You know, you and Damon and Nancy brought up a good idea, good point. I have here a Hazelden book, and it says the 12-step prayer book.
Mm-hmm. I have it.
And in it, it has a prayer from the first step all the way to the 12th step. And it has a part here, and it's got meeting prayer, number one, always number one and number three. To me, just this part here alone should be AA approved, but it being in this Hazleton book.
Okay, go ahead.
I just have a question. What is the big thing with Hazleton? It's like, you know, in my home group, I have Hazleton, and it's like Hazleton. It's like Coke and Pepsi. I mean, what is?
That's a good question.
Yeah, like,
what's the big thing with Hazleton?
Well, you want to take that one?
Well, I think it's a question of opinion versus experience. Everybody's going to, when people come up with this, they get, look at the surface of things and hear somebody say Hazleton's not going to approve. You know, for me, my ego will jump up and say, oh, you can't use that because so-and-so said it wasn't approved, without bothering to look into it a little more deeply. You know, I read Mel Barber's Walk and Drive Places because I read the 24-hour book for years, and when they came out with Daily Reflections, I read that for years, and that's kind of become a habit of life. That's my business. That's, you know, group autonomy and individual autonomy is important to me. It's important. If I don't let you have it, then it diminishes mine. So I want you to be able to be free to decide whatever you want to do. If a group wants to, where is it somewhere in there that says it can open a nightclub and hire a preacher and pay him from the proceeds of the nightclub? But it's someplace in the depths of the literature, whether it's got a stamp of approval on it. But, you know, the reason for that emphasis on, you went over that earlier today, I think, about everybody and his brother getting into the psychological mumbo-jumbo. I read a book recently by an esteemed MD who was just attacking Bill Wilson for plagiarism, which he openly admits he took the, you know, things from religion and medicine and so forth, just to try to find an excuse to put him down and get people to buy his damn book.
Yeah, I have quite a collection of books of why AA doesn't work.
Yeah.
We may not have any opinion on outside issues, but a lot of people have opinion about us.
Yeah.
Okay, but with regards to Hazleton, I look at them myself as a publishing house. There are things that I wouldn't touch with a fork that Hazleton is published. But what I'm always trying to look for the background is, where did it originate? You know, Richmond Walker had the original 24-hour day book on index cards. And he tried then to get the book, and he presented it to Alcoholics Anonymous, and we turned him down. Okay, but nevertheless, that was the only reminder book there was for alcoholics until Daily Reflections in 1990. Okay, so it served a wonderful purpose. And Richmond Walker, of course, was a drunk himself. Okay, and so that who wrote it? Ed Webster has written three books, actually four. The fourth one is really hard to find. I have three of them. The Red Book, Stools and Bottles, and there's one that's ODAP. It's about the alcoholic monkey. Our devilish alcoholic personalities. ODAP the monkey, okay? Which I find. But again, here we have: was he a drunk? Was he in AA? And if he's in an AA, it's just my opinion, my preference, that the people that were in AA that wrote something be kept alive. That's, I mean, that, and as archivists, I think we have a more of a an opportunity to recognize who went before and take a look at the gifts that we've been given in various cities around the country, recognizing how many people can get their story into the big book.
Yeah.
Okay. A lot more than them should be remembered and should be under our umbrella. That's personal opinion. Okay, but that's where I'm coming from, pretty much with the whole subject. That's why I like the 1,000 years of sobriety, which has 20 people with more than 50 years, and I think that's a wonderful book to have. And people are out there producing things that, in many regards, I consider to be very complementary to our history.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Well, you haven't gone before.
When this controversy always comes up and stirred up and people get fired up about it, where do they forget the passage that Bill put in the book? Be quick to see where religious people are right and utilize all they have to offer. Mm-hmm. Now, that's a defense against any of the self-righteous AA police that want to tell me how I have to do this program. And that's the freedom that I've discovered in that book, is there is no set standard how to proceed. We have suggested format to follow, but it's up to me how I want to do it. And for another alcoholic to sit in a meeting and judge another alcoholic, that's the great comedy of AA. You know? I mean, come on. We didn't get sober to judge all of our fellow people. And that I always refer to that passage. Be quick to see where those people are right.
Okay.
Instead of condemning them.
Thank you, Fred. Go ahead.
What I have is a statement going back to the Hazleton thing. What was explained to me about the different literature there and conference approved is basically when we buy from conference approved literature, like the money stays here. It's in AA. But when we buy Hazleton, it does not. That's what I was told.
Okay. All right. Well, I have enjoyed putting this together, and I think, you know, it, one of the things about it, there is some definite strong feelings with regards to the subject, but I think that we've adequately supported it unless somebody has a burning desire that they need to share.
Being an alcoholic,
okay.
What Carl Jung said about the difference between religion and spirituality, and he said it was dogma. And he said, dogma is not either good or bad. It just simply says, if you believe this, you're one of us. If you don't, you're not. And spirituality basically says, we're all one regardless of what you believe.
Right. Okay.
So I kind of like that.
All right. Well then, thank you very much for coming.